Hello and welcome to Breaking Ground on iProperty Radio with myself, Carol Tallon, the show where we chat to industry experts to get a view on what's happening on the ground and to learn about new trends emerging within the construction industry. This show is brought to you in partnership with Place Engage, a data-driven platform for more successful public consultation and community engagement for your next development project. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Patrick Bruce, Research Assistant Lecturer with TUD Dublin. Patrick, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Carol. Very nice to be here. How are you?
I'm very well. You can see from my backdrop that normally I have my Dublin backdrop up. From my backdrop, I am in the heart of the Gaeltacht, in the heart of Connemara. And today we're going to talk about April being Stress Awareness Month. And I can tell you, after a stressful few months, I am delighted to be decompressing in Connemara. So I am very interested in what you have to say today. But more importantly, you're going to talk about mental health across the construction industry. And, you know, a couple of years ago when the CIF introduced mental health as part of the pillars in Health and Safety Week, I remember we made the point there and then, OK, this has to be something that we don't just talk about for a week in October. So from that point of view, really interested in the research that you're doing and the work that you're doing. So, Patrick, you might just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be a research assistant lecturer within TUD.
Yes, of course, Carol. How long have we got? Well, as I say, my name is Patrick Bruce, and I've worked in TU Dublin now for about the last 4 or 5 years. I obtained a PhD there a couple of years ago. And it's been a very, very long journey. I initially went and studied in Waterford. It was actually called a regional technical college back in the 80s, and done a diploma there, and then got sick of the education and went off into industry for years and worked and renovated houses and worked as a construction manager, worked as a carpenter. And then back in 2005, 2008, I decided to go back and do a degree because it turned out that you needed a degree to do lots and lots of things. So I went back as a mature student. I walked into the class the first day. People thought I was the lecturer, but I was actually a student. And I met other mature students there as well, and we really got on so well. So cutting a long story short, I finished a Bachelor of Science in Construction Management with a first class honours. Went on to Grange Gorman, which is another part of TU Dublin, and done a Master's in Health and Safety. And then my supervisor convinced me to do a PhD because I had absolutely no intention of doing one whatsoever. To me, a PhD was kind of like a helicopter. It was kind of nice for other people, but it certainly wasn't for me. But kind of long story short, with his Dr. Victor Highmark, with his huge support, eventually ended up completing that on workplace stress and graduated. And now I'm a full-time lecturer in Technological University in Dublin. So I've come the whole way, if you like.
And do you know, you actually left out some of the really important parts there, that actually you started in the industry as a carpenter.
Yes, I worked as a carpenter with my father for years. We renovated lots of houses together. We worked for lots of clients. Seamus Heaney, the poet, was actually one of our clients. So we worked for lots and lots of different people. And, you know, I know what it's like to work on the tools. The jobs that I worked on, though, you were never really just a carpenter. You were a carpenter stroke, you know, general operative stroke, whatever you were told to be that day. So we had to kind of be multifaceted. So, yeah, I have a huge amount of experience working in the construction industry. Done a lot of stuff, yeah.
You know, it's a really interesting journey, and I'm delighted that you gave the old RTC in Waterford a shout out. You were there in the 80s. I was there in the 90s as it transitioned into WIT, Waterford IT. Now it's obviously the SETU, which is great. But I've only good things to say about Waterford. But it's a really interesting journey. And one of the things that I'm very interested in at the moment is, you know, the huge emergence of offsite and modern methods of construction. And one of the things we're seeing through there is the critical importance of a link between academic research and the industry. And look, Honestly, I don't think that's something we've done well in the past, and I don't think it's something we've nailed down now. So
Yeah.
can you explain to me, the industry or the government has recognized there needs to be a strong link between academia and industry, and it has called for academic programs, particularly with a modern methods of construction focus, but even across other disciplines to be industry led. And frankly, I don't think academia knows how to be industry led because it prioritizes research that can be dated and not entirely relevant, but also industry doesn't know how to work with academia. I'm not sure if it trusts it. I'm not sure if it gives it the respect it needs. Am I out of touch in my thinking that there's a disconnect there?
No, I think you're absolutely right. Now, I suppose in TU Dublin, we are trying to change that. Only in the last 4 or 5 years, we've actually transitioned from an institute of technology to a university. And I suppose the focus of our university now is very much on research. We pay a huge amount of attention to it, and we're developing all kinds of strategies. But you're absolutely right. I mean, if you take workplace stress, which we're going to talk a little bit about today, if you investigate workplace stress and you look for academic papers on it, there's a huge amount of, for example, the teaching industry, and also, say, the health sector. But if you look for workplace stress in relation to the construction sector, there's actually very, very little out there. So trying to find research papers in relation to modern methods construction or all these kind of other issues are it's actually quite difficult to do. So that's why I, as a principal investigator, have set up a research group within our Faculty of Construction, Surveying and Construction Innovation in TU Dublin. To my area is workplace stress. So I have researchers now investigating workplace stress in the construction industry. And some of the statistics around it are actually quite shocking, you know.
And but to share some of those statistics, because I suppose one thing that comes up on the show quite regularly over the past 5 years is the construction industry is still very much dealing with the fallout of the crash. And the fallout of the crash was so much more than financial. And I'm sure having been in the industry at the time, you recall the same thing that I do, that
Horrible.
we were losing members almost on a weekly basis. And there's not ju there wasn't just a huge amount of stress, financial stress, sadness. There was a mass amount of shame that hasn't gone away. We still speak to industry leaders who I will sit down and have a coffee with, but they would never record a podcast with me because they still feel shame at some of the things that happened during the crash, and they just would never talk about what they've achieved since then, the employment they've achieved since then, the employment they've delivered, the great projects they've delivered. They just don't recognize it. There's still a huge hangover in terms of the impact of the crash that has never been explored, to my mind, across academic or social realm. So, but I presume stress predates the crash. So where does your research take us?
Well, I suppose if you're looking at the construction industry as a whole, like if you were to sit down and like do a recipe of what is a stressful industry, I suppose construction would be a perfect example. So typically, huge amounts of money are involved. You have on the one hand clients that want their buildings fixed or ready or made as quickly as they can, so they can start making money through renting or living in them. You have deadlines, penalty clauses, you have quality issues. You've people with either too much work or too little work, and they're always kind of trying to balance that, trying to keep everyone happy. And then you've the whole idea of sourcing materials and sourcing labor. So if you were to look at the ingredients for it, it's actually an incredibly stressful environment to work in. I suppose just looking at workplace stress in general across all organizations, there's a couple of things. When we talk about stress, everyone thinks it's a kind of a negative thing, and it can be. There's distress, but there's also good stress, eustress. Look, we're doing this podcast this morning. There's a certain amount of stress involved, but like we're happy to do it. So I think it's important that we recognize that not all stress is actually bad. Where stress gets bad is if it becomes what's called chronic stress. So, like you're waking up every morning, oh my goodness, I have to face this job again. So, that's, and there's a huge link between workplace stress and ill health. and absolutely massive. But I mean, just a statistic in the construction industry, in the Ireland and UK, two construction workers die every single day from mental health issues. So, which is absolutely horrific. And if that happened in anything else, the industry would be nearly closed down. Like if there was two people falling every day, there'd be massive corrections made. The second thing about workplace stress is that people in leadership roles play a very important part with the dissemination of workplace stress. So if you get a kind of a good manager or manageress that's emotionally intelligent, generally speaking, levels of stress will be reduced. And the final thing about it is interventions are very subjective. They're very scant and they're also quite subjective. So what may work as an intervention for me may not necessarily work for you. So I guess that's just a broad overview of looking at the construction sector and others as well.
I think it's a good, it's an important point that you're making there that not all stress is bad. But when you talk about the link between workplace stress and in ill health, how do you separate workplace stress to, I suppose, a more general stress that is across your life?
Well, it's very difficult. That's the reality. And there is no perfect, formula for advocating what that answer is. In fact, as researchers, we can't even agree on what a definition of stress is. I mean, some people would say it's a multifaceted phenomena comprising of diverse reactions for either tangible or non-tangible threats, which is a big load of gobbledygook. But the answer is there's no clear-cut answer to what you've asked. And very often, when people are very stressed at work, it's a kind of a cumulative effect of, the kids are causing trouble at home, or, I'm having trouble with my car, or maybe someone in the family is causing an issue as well. So it can be a cumulative effect. And in a lot of cases, the job just takes it over the edge as such, if that makes sense.
Right, but I suppose I want to make this quite tangible for people listening in. And one of the things that I have noticed, and in fact, it is actually being said to me more and more, and usually by people of my own age and older, really reflecting on the younger generation and their lack of resilience, lack of ability to cope, their propensity for stress. Is there a generational difference?
I think sometimes we give younger generations a bit of a bad rap. I remember being young and being told by my parents and grandparents that we couldn't cope as well. I think that younger people have a huge range of stressors that our generation didn't have. And one particular one, just to focus on for a moment, is the whole issue of what's called techno stress. So this is the amount of technology that we use nowadays. I mean, even us having this at the moment, could you imagine us doing this 20 years ago? It would be amazing. And specifically in relation to the construction sector, with building information modeling, with surveying, with modern methods of construction, it's become a highly technical workplace environment now. And if you're not familiar with that amount of technology, it's very difficult to kind of continue in the industry. So our young people, as well as having all the traditional issues that we've always had, trying to look for work, trying to look for housing, trying to look for relationships, etc., we have all this new technology, and the industry is changing massively as well compared to, like, I keep harping back to stuff that we built in the 80s, but a 1980s house is a completely different thing than a modern building is, with all their different regulations,
Just because your focus and your background has come from the traditional construction industry, and now you're looking at stress across, and to be honest, look, I look forward to the day where we don't kind of talk about the traditional construction industry and modern methods of construction. It's just this is contemporary construction and this is how we do things. But how we do things is going to be increasingly, if in a facility, it's going to be increasingly manufacturing led, which has a different set of maybe productivity outcomes. And so have you explored any research, or is there, does such a thing exist to almost compare, is the move towards a more manufacturing approach for construction, is that likely to increase or decrease stressors across the industry?
Well, I think it's difficult to say. Our research hasn't really focused on that. But obviously, if you take, for example, modern methods of construction, that has advantages and disadvantages. It has stressors that come about from, say, stuff that didn't happen in the past. I think what our research has focused on is just speaking to people about telling us what is actually stressing you. We don't come in with any preconceived ideas. We just speak to people in interviews and say, well, listen, what's stressing you? And we've spoken to apprentices, architects, clients, we've spoken to all kinds of trades. And some of the main findings in relation to our findings are, what are they coming back with? Well, I mean, aside from all the usual ones, they're saying to us that they feel that there's an inability to be able to report stress. They find that there's a certain amount of stigma involved. In the construction industry specifically is very masculine. Men and women deal with workplace stress in different ways. One of the disadvantages of being a guy in relation to stress is that we tend to not speak about it as much as women. And the whole masculine nature of it. So that's one of the big things. I think, in the academic world, we call it safety silence. So we feel bad about talking about it. There's other things that are coming up as well. So we're finding a lot of what's called interpersonal conflict. So conflict is just people not getting on with each other. Now, there's nothing unusual about conflict in work environments. It's as human beings, it's bound to happen. It has to happen. But I guess what's happening from our research is that if you look at, we tend to concentrate when we're looking at the construction industry and the materials, but actually our labor and plant, but actually it's a very people-orientated business. If you think of all the hundreds of thousands of communications through email and talking that we need to do in order to do a building, make a building, and in that communication, we're going to meet people that we get on with. We're going to meet people that we don't get on with. And it's this amalgamation of people coming together, and the conflict that occurs is having an effect on what we're finding in relation to people. But there's also other stuff as well. We're finding that there's a direct correlation between backbiting and workplace stress. So backbiting is talking about people in a negative way, which is happens in all industries. There's nothing unusual about that. And we're finding a correlation between the more backbiting that there is on a particular job, the more workplace stress there is. And just to finish off in relation to our findings, another couple of findings that we're finding is flexibility in the workplace is really important for reducing workplace stress. So if you have a manager that's watching the clock the minute you're coming in and you're 2 minutes late and they're mentioning that to you, whereas if you have a manager or a manageress that says, look, you're 10 minutes late, you're half an hour late, you had to drop the kid off, you can make it up later on. That makes a huge difference. And also, the last finding we're finding, and this is just in our research, praise is very important. Telling people that they've done a good job. That a lot of construction companies think that that may be a costly thing to do. Well, you can have a toolbox talk once a week and have a raffle for a few breakfast rolls to appreciate people. It doesn't actually. So there's some of the findings that we're coming across in our research, which we weren't really expecting that they were going to be as kind of prevalent as they were.
I there's a couple of things I want to unpack there, but first of all, you started by saying along with the usual stressors. What are the usual stressors?
Yeah, so the usual stressors would be clients who want their building finished, obviously, and deadlines. Deadlines are a really important part of the construction industry. Penalty clauses. Contractors are terrified that if they go over the deadline, they have to pay a penalty clause. Sometimes there's quality issues with the work where the subcontractor hasn't completed work to a certain degree. As I said, there's normally large amounts of money involved. And also, contractors and workers having either too much work or too little work. During the recession, they don't have enough work. Now they've tons of work. They're trying to please everyone, and there's a certain amount of stress trying to keep everyone happy. And then I suppose I'm nearly sure I've missed one or two, but sourcing materials, making sure the materials arrive on time, and finally sourcing labor. Because labor in the construction industry, there's actually a shortage of it in Ireland at the moment. So trying to source good people. So they would be kind of the usual stressors in relation to construction.
You know, and it's funny, some of those are almost self-perpetuating, as in the less attractive this is as an industry, the less you're going to encourage new talent into it, which is going to increase the shortage of talent available to you. You know,
Sure.
there's definitely an element of that. But you know, I suppose I'm just thinking of it maybe from taking a step back from a contractor or from a construction manager's perspective, and the fact that you have worked as a construction manager. You can see that actually there is a balance between you talk about the team members' need for flexibility, but yet deadlines actually do drive this industry, and
Right.
they can be I suppose you know they can be conflicting from the start. That the one you talk about backbiting, I'm really surprised about that. So can you explain to me maybe what that would look like on a job site?
Yeah, so backbiting, I mean, backbiting occurs in all industries. There's a guy who's done some research on it. He's from Norway. His name is Dr. Rolf Olsen. But actually, if you research backbiting for research papers, you'll find very little about it. But what we're finding, it's different to gossip. Gossip is just talking about people. You know, did you see Mary's new coat? Did you see John's shoes? Backbiting is talking about people in a negative way. Now, people do it for various reasons. The first thing is, if you're backbiting, it makes you look really interesting. That's the first thing. Second thing is, it takes the spotlight away from you. But it does actually occur in every industry, whether it's an office or the construction industry, teaching, everywhere. We're finding that in the construction sector, that it does exist. It exists a lot. Sometimes people very often in the construction industry work in groups. So you might have a group of concrete workers, you may have a group of carpenters, etc. The construction industry is extremely unique in some ways, in that it's a very sequential industry. So what I mean by that is, you can't finish your job till another job has their job done. Okay, so and very often what I've seen and what's coming over in the research is the plasterer is going to blame the block layer because the block layers are a bit off. The block layer is going to blame the guys that done the foundations because that's a bit off. So everyone has their own little job to do. So if I'm a carpenter and I'm doing second fix, I want to go in, I want to hang my skirt in architrave doors, and I want to get out there, out. I don't want to be hanging around. So I suppose I don't know whether that's the cause of it, but we are finding that there is a certain amount of backbiting going on, and it is causing tension within the industry, within groups of people within the industry.
You know, when you describe it like that, that makes absolute sense because you're absolutely right. Each set of workers coming in blame the work or criticize the work that's been done before. That is invariably the case. And I suppose that's just something that happens right across the board. And I suppose it's just something I have never considered the impact of that actually. So even the people who are doing it are having it done to them and are feeling the impact, but yet they're not maybe they're not coming full circle in their thinking to think, okay, well, I'm doing that and others are doing it to me, and yet it impacts me like this. You know, we talk a lot across our shows on the need for diversity across real estate development and construction and planning. But when you talk about, you know, some of this is you talk about construction being unique for a number of different reasons, but the fact that it is so heavily male dominated, that it's allowing maybe stigmas to build up or to prevail, whereas we see across other industries that stigma isn't there. You know, people do feel that they can acknowledge a certain amount of stress. So that's, you know, it's just one more reason why we need to have greater diversity across the industry. But I mean, in terms of the gossip, I've actually said this to people in the past, but as almost an outsider working with construction, I find it actually the gossip across construction is more rife than I've ever experienced it in law or even in property. And I don't know why that is. And you know, so when people talk about you know, women have the stereotype of being gossips, whereas actually because we work mainly with men, I would say that men are much worse gossips. It
Oh,
might be,
100%.
and I
100%.
don't think it's badly intended. They just like knowing stuff about other people, and then they like telling you what they know about
That's
other
right.
people.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's part of the human condition. We love to know juicy stories about people. And I mean, it's interesting the point that you brought out there about diversity. If you look at research across the board in all industries, if you have very heavily dominated sectors by a particular gender, so for example, construction male, or for example, nursing female, wherever you have a highly dominant gendered environment of one gender, you're going to have more workplace stress. That is a kind resonates across the literature. So, for example, nursing would have a very high rate of workplace stress, and also construction. And also, there's research papers I was reading recently where you have those heavily dominated gender industries, there's also more absenteeism, more presenteeism, etc. So you do need a kind of a breakup. Now, just to tie in as well to what you were speaking about diversity, really good news in TU Dublin. We've noticed in our departments now, for example, construction management, nearly a third of the class are now female in construction. So the industry is changing. More and more women are definitely coming into it. And in fact, a couple
Fantastic.
of my colleagues had a brunch for women in construction there, I think it was last month. So it's we're highlighting this. And I think it's really good to have a more balanced gender role, because it's been proven to reduce workplace stress. That's for sure.
That's really I had never heard that before actually. And of course it makes absolute sense. And now that you've almost likened it to the situation in nursing, I have many friends who are in nursing. And that's absolutely their story. That you know that's absolutely their experience. Apologies there, Patrick. The line broke up ever so slightly. Did you say that a third of construction management students now coming into TU Dublin are female?
Yes, and we've seen that in
Fantastic.
quantity surveying as well. So the numbers of female are growing within the academic environment of TU Dublin. And it's absolutely fantastic to see, because they do bring a whole different perspective to a construction site. And actually, if from my experience, if there are females on construction sites, I've noticed that it actually there's too much testosterone around. And it just makes the whole thing work a lot smoother. Now, it's not just me saying that. The academic papers suggest that as well. So the diversity towards women in construction coming in is great to see. Really important and good to see.
You know, and I genuinely think it's a really compelling way to position this is actually by talking about the need for gender balance. So it's not about one or the other. And I think that again, the comparison with nursing actually is really important. So it makes the argument for greater diversity. And quite frankly, I think gender is only one tiny slice of the diversity conversation that we
Correct.
be having. You know,
Correct.
I in my through my work, I would see, you know, particularly when we work across traditional construction and offsite and modern methods of construction, but we also work on the real estate side and planning. And actually, we would see neurodiversity as actually being a really important component that is absent across the built environment. And it's not even so much that it's absent, it's more that people who are neurodiverse tend to have to set up almost on their own, so they come in as a contracted, you know, but they tend not to have success in maybe the larger firms that tend to
Yes.
operate in a very one-dimensional way, and
Yes, yes.
that's a real problem because at the end of the day, it's the large projects that are driving maybe some of the procurement changes that we see, and you know that influence decision making across the industry,
That's right.
whether it's from sector or policy or even academia. So it's good that we have neurodiversity, but we don't essentially want it locked away in small businesses and SMEs across the industry. We do need it at a decision-making level at the larger public and private or state organizations.
Yes.
You know, this is I think your research is infinitely fascinating. And I suppose, and I know that you're relatively new to this side of it. So I suppose, just my own understanding, is your research focused on understanding stress, or is it understanding stress with a view to maybe look at interventions
Yeah,
and
yeah.
tackle it?
Well, I suppose it's a really good question. I suppose it's all of those. We're looking at what causes stress in the construction industry. We are looking at the effects of what it has. We're noticing a lot of absenteeism and presenteeism. And actually, in all industries, if you look at some of the European Union statistics, they're going in a kind of a negative trend. Like workplace stress 20 years ago was not really spoken about, but it's now the number one cause of absenteeism at jobs and presenteeism and sickness, etc. And we're also looking hugely, we're kind of fascinated about the whole interventions. There's a couple of reasons why we're fascinated about the interventions. Workplace stress, well-being, they come under a whole area called psychosocial risks. Psychosocial risks are different from normal risks, from, let's say, falling from a height or working in a trench. The differences are, well, it's three differences. The first difference is they're highly subjective. Okay, so as we covered earlier, what might stress you may not stress me. That's the first thing. The second thing is they're very often hidden. Okay, so I can't walk onto a job and say, oh, yes, I can. I'll take my monitor out here and there's a 20% reading of workplace stress in here. It's very hidden. You might have to be on a job for a couple of weeks before you see the dynamics of who's actually causing the stress, where's the stress coming from. And the third thing about it is, people think that workplace stress, a really bad workplace stress, is just part of the job and they don't want to talk about it. So that's the first thing. In relation to interventions, different companies, and we're seeing this a lot in the construction sector now, they're paying more and more time and investment into working out what interventions are going to work. So we're seeing now all kinds of EAPs, employment assistance programs. We're seeing like it being brought up much more at toolbox talks. We're seeing apps on phones. We're seeing mental health first aiders. We're seeing kind of skills demonstrations. We're seeing companies send people on courses about mental health. So in fairness to the industry, particularly amongst the larger companies, we are seeing a trajectory towards highlighting this, making it more prevalent, saying, listen, if you are suffering for stress and you are suffering from not just stress, but financial difficulties, you want to stop smoking, all this kind of stuff, we're going to try and help you with that. So that's a good thing to see.
Yeah, do you know, I'm actually going to just take this opportunity to remind people that the Lighthouse Charity is a charity that's available to all of the construction industry and their partners and families. And I think maybe that's not very well understood. And it is a resource, it's a free resource there that is available. And you know, we've featured the Lighthouse Charity on the show, Construction Charity on the show previously, and they shared the similar stat there that across the UK and Ireland, we are losing two of our colleagues every day due
That's right.
to mental health issues. And from that point of view, I it's so important that we point out to people that there is a dedicated resource here through the Lighthouse Construction Charity. It is available free of charge, not just to construction workers, but to their families. And actually, in the last year, I've had the opportunity to be able to help the family of a construction worker by directing them in that way. And again, they just didn't know it was a resource that was available to them. So we absolutely want to make that point. So if there is anybody that's identifying maybe with what you're talking about today, that they understand there is a free resource there dedicated to the construction industry in the UK and Ireland that they can avail of. And I will share the link to the Construction Lighthouse Charity
Yeah, you're right, Carol. And
with
they're
the
a
share.
fantastic resource. They really are. And
Yeah,
also,
they
if there
are.
are people listening to this, I guess from my research, what I'd say to people, the most important thing that I think you can do from looking at our research, if you are suffering from any kind of workplace stress or indeed just stress, is to share it with someone, is to talk to someone about it. Okay, that's probably one of the most important things you can do. I mean, there is things down the line which, I'm alluding to, but actually, what some companies are doing is they're choosing people in management positions on the basis of not just their knowledge and experience, but also in relation to their emotional intelligence, because there is a link between emotional intelligence and their ability to be able to deal with people. So I think emotional intelligence is described as the ability to control your own emotions and see emotions in other people. And that's very important when you're in a leadership role. We've all come across people who kind of know everything about construction, but actually can't talk to people. So that's quite important if you're in a management role.
Patrick, is emotional intelligence, is that something that people can learn? I mean, we tend to talk about innate abilities, and with leadership, we know there are some innate abilities, but there's others that you learn, you acquire, you receive training on. Emotional intelligence, is that something that, you know, we need to be focusing more as part of the construction management training?
I think it is. And I think very often we tend to concentrate when we're, particularly from a college point of view, we tell students everything about sustainability and drawing and building technology and all the different resources, but we actually don't teach them how to speak to people, how to interact with people. And as a construction manager or any professional or any apprentice in the construction industry, speaking to people and interacting with people is crucially important. You may know all the building technology in the world, but if you're not able to speak to people in a nice way, well, then that really compromises you. So I think the emotional intelligence part, to answer your question, a certain amount of it can be learned, and a certain amount of it, I think you have to have yourself. And also, a twin with emotional intelligence is to build up your own resilience into workplace stress. And that's a lot of stuff of that can be actually learned. How to, you can go on courses for it, you can learn it online, how to build up your own individual resilience that maybe you don't take things so personally. That's quite important. And it goes in a kind of a tandem with emotional intelligence. There are ways of kind of barriers to defend yourself.
Yeah, you know, I think this is a topic we definitely want to return to again. I'm not just fascinated by your research, but I think it is critically important to the longevity of for a career in construction. And I suppose
Correct.
the final thing I want to talk to you about today is you know, one of the things that I'm very interested, not just in terms of your research, but the journey that you've taken from carpenter to construction manager that involved at several stages in your life going back to academia. And I suppose at first glance we would look at that and see the benefit that you know you would have received through the education. But the other side of it is, you know, we're focused a lot on knowledge transfer as we're losing people out of the industry due to retirement and other reasons. And I think as an industry, we're facing a bit of a difficulty in terms of knowledge transfer. And I see what the way your journey, and I'm sure I don't know, you probably didn't intend this, but your journey really serves as an example of a great way to get knowledge transfer from carpentry and construction management and on-site activities, almost a knowledge transfer feeding into the direction of future research that will shape the industry. You know, is there anything that you can share for people who, you know, might not have thought going back to college in your 30s, 40s, 50s was an option? Is there kind of something you can share that might be helpful for those people?
Yeah, Carol, I think that's an incredibly important point that you've raised. And the construction industry and all its the built environment industry across Ireland has lots of wonderful, highly intelligent people working in it. Some of the most smartest people I ever came across were tradespeople. And I can't encourage mature students enough. Mind you, the definition of a mature student is anyone over the age of 22. So m many of us would qualify for that. But I would really encourage mature students to consider doing courses in not just our college, but any built environment college. What you'll find is that colleges are extraordinarily welcoming towards mature students. And when I went back in, I was welcomed with open arms. As lecturers, we love to see mature students in the class because they share their own opinions, their own ideas with some we may agree with, some we may disagree with, but it gets the conversation going in the class. So I would absolutely implore the thousands of mature people all across the built environment industry, come back into college, and you'll be absolutely surprised how much you'll actually enjoy it. And I teach a lot of mature students at the moment, and they start off, oh, I'm too busy for all this, and they slowly get into it, and before they know it, they actually love the course.
Do you know, Patrick, that's a very positive thing. So I'm going to share a slight word of caution. I go back to college every few years while I'm working, and right now I'm undertaking my master's in planning and development in the University of Galway. And I am just going to say to people, you think going in with decades of experience is an advantage all the way through. Sometimes it's a disadvantage, and there's a process of unlearning and humbling
That's
that
right.
has to happen as well. And you know, that's part of it, because you know, you kind of you need to approach some of the information with a very fresh mind, and you have to take that that Zen attitude, the beginner's
That's
mind
right.
approach. And actually, that can take a little bit of a process to do as well, but it's thoroughly worthwhile. But it's a bit of a it can be a bit of a learning curve, but it's definitely something that I would echo your sentiments there and encourage people into. And I suppose the final point is that, you know, we can see and I know we've touched on offsite and modern methods of construction a few times before, but we can see that the government really wants there to be a stronger link between academia and industry, and we can see the benefits from that. And so, you know, when we're looking at academic research, we know that the government wants it to be industry led. And I feel, again, you know, I mentioned it earlier that I think both academia and industry struggle with this because we don't really know what it looks like, but it's something that we're really trying to learn. So there's a process of us learning how to work better together. So we're feeding in better inputs into the academic research, so we're actually helping shape the academic research, so the outputs will be useful for industry.
Correct.
So there's, you know, it's a full circle there. But I just want to take the opportunity to mention that MMC Ireland, the industry representative body for about 80 companies involved in the delivery, design, and procurement of offsite and other modern methods of construction in Ireland, they're actually, in order to strengthen that academic and industry bond, and to really you know, contribute to industry-led academic research, they're going to be taking on a graduate or postgraduate intern for a 3-month placement to actually explore and help unlock some of the data that is within these offsite and modern methods of construction companies, to try actually just give us better data so we know what we're working with. And you know, while it's an initial 3-month placement for a graduate or postgraduate student, we're certainly doing this with a view to seeing what potential research and PhD opportunities might open up in the future. So it's a kind of a case of industry dipping its toe in the academic waters and to see what comes out of it. But one thing we know for sure is that there's a huge amount of knowledge, data, and important information locked within some of these companies, and trying to unlock it takes time. So the government is struggling to do it, academia is struggling to do it. As an industry representative body, you know, we have a certain way in, but it's still a struggle to be able to do that. So actually, this is a problem that is yet to be solved, and we're hoping the next generation of talent will be able to step in and do something there. So it's an opportunity that's there, but again, the whole focus is to try strengthen that industry-led approach to academic research, so that the outputs
Sure.
not only will be useful for the industry, but in turn will be useful for speeding up the delivery of homes and healthcare facilities and schools and everything that we need. And in a way, it almost brings us back full circle. We cannot deliver across the built environment with half a workforce, and that addressing diversity and ensuring an attractive construction industry that people want to choose is a huge part of that. And reducing the stress has to be lead. So I suppose a final piece, Patrick, what would be your final words to say people who were in the position you were in 20 years ago, or even 10 years ago, as a construction manager, and they're going in dealing with their team while having understanding that it's humans they're dealing with, but still having very real deadlines and financial pressures? What's the most helpful thing we can say to them this week?
Well, I would suggest that first of all, you look after yourself. That's very important. And I think something, an underlying trend which we've come across is if you try and treat people the way that you would like to be treated. I know it sounds a little bit corny, but actually, if you can kind of think about that, sometimes you might be going into work, you're taking a lot of baggage from other parts of your life. And just the way you interact with people, not just verbally, but through emails as well. Very often we find that people can get lost in emails. You know, you send a one-liner and people kind of read it the wrong way. So I guess just be conscious of the way you interact with people and try and deal with people in the same way that you would like to be dealt with. And also try and understand where they're coming from. If a person has a different view than you, it doesn't necessarily mean they're trying to get one over on you. They may actually just be taking their lived experiences in the industry and looking at a particular problem in a different way. So that would be just, you know, a 1 minute synopsis of it. Treat people nicely, and in a lot of cases, that will come back to you as well.
Patrick, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed our conversation today. I think the research you're doing is so important for the industry, and I'd love to touch base another couple of months, and particularly see the outcome of. I'm so heartened to hear that one third of the construction management students going in there are female. So we look forward to
Absolutely.
welcoming that burst of talent into the industry in coming years. And I think your points around diversity are really something that we need to. It kind of reframes some of the diversity conversation, and it's something that we need to give serious consideration to. So thank you so much for being so generous with your time
Not at
and
all, Carol. Pleasure.
well, and sharing your research, and I hope you'll continue to do that because I think it's just so important for the industry. So thank you so much. That was Patrick Bruce, Research Assistant Lecturer with TU Dublin. Our thanks to show producer Katie Tallon and to the podcast production team at Hear Me Roar Media. Also, thanks to Place Engage for making these conversations possible. And finally, thank you indeed for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next episode of Breaking Ground. In the meantime, please be sure to check out all of the other Irish and international real estate and construction shows here on iPropertyRadio.com.